Hello and welcome to Tales from the Pit, the behind the lens access to the entertainment world and the creative people involved. Today, we have special guest Tom Reardon, guitar tech and stage manager. Tom, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Hey, bud. Great to be here.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So we usually like to get started with sort of a little history behind how you got started. What was your influence growing up and that sort of, you know, quick bird's eye view of that. Can you kind of break that down for us?
So I have always been interested in the music world and the business end behind it. I started playing guitar at a very young age. And as far as getting into the music end of it, the business and touring world, my uncle was a rigger and was actually the lead rigger for many tours throughout the 80s and 90s. More popularly, he was the rigger for, Journey. He was actually in their documentary. Who else? Some little guy called Michael Jackson at the time. He did the Super Bowl every year. And more notably, which really brought me into the music world, was I got to watch, the chaos of Woodstock 99 from stage left. Backstage. Oh, wow. I went there. My mother actually had brought me when I was a teenager to Woodstock 99 to watch my Uncle Bobby work. And up until that point, much like everyone else, you know, you kind of go to these rock and roll shows and you get in your seat and you get to watch this amazing show and really have no idea what went on to put that on. And it just kind of, you walk in and there's this awesome show. And like I said, there's a whole community of people that make these shows happen. So I got to witness that for many years of my life growing up, watching my uncle do this and tour the entire world. And I went, wow, you know, that's really cool. Well, I'm afraid of heights, so I don't want to, you know, go, 60 feet above an arena floor, but I'm sure there's something else I can do. So being a guitar player and a gear nerd, you know, I kind of landed in the role of being a guitar technician. So
that's awesome.
That's kind of how, so you guys can kind of say it's almost like a family business.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's kind of what landed me into the curiosity of touring the world as a crew member and, wanting to, do my part in the music community to make people that spend all this money to come to rock shows enjoy them and know that their money is being spent very well. And these shows go off without a hitch and without a problem. And if something happens, you know, we're the guys that mysteriously make it all work without ever skipping a beat or noticing that something's gone wrong.
Yeah, we'll definitely dive into a lot of that. I mean, you've been working with a ton of my favorite bands. I've seen you work many, many times. I kind of want to get to all that stuff in just a moment.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more about the younger days. So guitar playing, what was your influence growing up guitar wise?
So, and you'll probably see this in the background in the video here when we cut away to clips and stuff. Growing up, my biggest influence was Ace Frehley from Kiss. I remember being a little kid and just watching these guys go on stage and blow things up and play these amazing rock and roll anthems. And, you know, being a young child, I went, man, that's really cool. That's kind of what I want to do. And sure enough, I saved up my allowance money and got my first guitar and learned every single Kiss song I could. You know,
what was that first guitar?
So I had my first guitar. It was actually somewhere over here. It was a little acoustic guitar I bought for $90. Much like any guitar player, you know, you just can't have that one guitar. I remember begging my mom, being like, hey, I really need an electric guitar. I can't hit all these notes up high, so I need an electric guitar. So I got a Fender Stratocaster with this little tiny amplifier and a distortion pedal because I had to have distortion. You know, you can't play rock and roll without distortion. So,
of course.
So I got that. And once I learned how to do all that kind of fun stuff with an electric guitar, the mighty Van Halen became playing on my stereo all the time. And just like Kiss, you know, I sat down and, you know, with the song book and the tab books, and those became my Bible, if you would say. And I mean, I got bit by the rock and roll bug bad, you know, and I was all about 8 years old when this all happened. So, you know, it's, that's kind of where my story began with that. And over time, it just, you know, things evolved and, you know, Slayer happened and bands like At the Gates happened. And, you know, the ball just kept rolling. And, you know, now I listen to everything from, I guess, progressive jazz to Cannibal Corpse.
Everything in between. That's quite a mix in between too.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So that's awesome, dude. And we'll get sort of into the first run, but did you have any training prior to doing any of this stuff? Did you have any education in any of this?
No. So I was just always a big nerd when it came to gear. I've always wanted to know how, you know, certain things worked. You know, when I was going through high school and after high school, you know, I was a diesel mechanic for many years. So taking things apart and putting them back together was always a big thing in my life. And, but I always played around with guitars and amplifiers and, you know, very similar to the Eddie Van Halen stories of, well, you know, you connect A to B and, you know, C to A sometimes, you know, you get weird sounds and you may get electrocuted, you may make something cool. So, you know, you kind of get bit a few times and then you learn not to do that. And then you figure out the right way to do it. And, you know, I guess the rest is kind of history. So I always wanted to modify my amplifiers and my guitars. And at the time when I was doing it, I never really kind of pictured that I would be one of these guys sitting in an arena somewhere, you know, rebuilding an amplifier for somebody because it got broken by the shipping company the night before, or, you know, or one of my guitar players that I'm working for, you know, had a strap failure and their guitar hit a wall doing a guitar spin and you had to repair the neck, which that's a story we'll get to, you know,
okay.
Which I'm sure you may know what I'm talking about. That was pretty publicly put on the internet, but so, yeah. We'll get into that. So, but yeah, I never really realized at the time when I was starting to learn how to mess around with this stuff that, it would become my life's career and, you know, ultimately what I would end up doing with my life. So it's kind of cool to kind of think about how, I mean, as a kid playing with this stuff to where I am today is just, you know, the, my 16-year-old Tom thinks, you know, 37-year-old Tom is pretty cool. We'll put it through that way.
Yeah, definitely. So the very first tour, was it your uncle that sort of shadowed, did you shadow your uncle on the first tour, or was it you just jumping in?
So I ended up, I toured with my own band for a long time, my original band, for many years. So, and then, you know, certain things happened in my life. You know, I had my son, so it came time to, you know, go, well, what do? You know, do I stay on the road trying to, you know, maybe sell some t-shirts, you know, at the Warped Tour, or do I, you know, kind of work a day job and, you know, be a dad? So I did the dad thing for a while. I ended up getting hurt at work, you know, working on semi-trucks and 18-wheelers, you know, it's pretty grueling on your body. And I got a phone call one day saying, hey man, we know that you know how to work on this stuff. We need a guitar technician to come out and help out. Would you be willing to at least come out and give us a hand? And I went, you know what? My son's old enough now. Let me talk to my son. My kid was like, get the hell out of the house. You know, go do that. So when I started actually touring professionally, my uncle had no influence on that, if you would. It's not like he made a phone call to a buddy and say, hey, my nephew's looking to go back on tour. What would you want to do? So it was just kind of my own merits on that. But touring was always something that I wanted to do on the crew side, watching him work and that work ethic. So I was always big into the crew life. And then, you know, I got my first run in as a guitar technician and kind of figured out, well, these are my people. You know, this is what I want to do. And what do I have to do to gain knowledge and, you know, be better at my job? And, you know, what can I do on that end? Then I went down this very, you know, deep rabbit hole of the guitar technician world, and my nerding out of guitar equipment went overboard, if you would.
What was some of those first bands that you started with?
So I went out with this band called Saving Abel. And I worked with them for quite a while. And those guys taught me, you know, the rules of the road, if you would, when being a technician. And, you know, they toured so much that it was, you know, one day we would be in a bus, one day we'd be in a van, next day we may be renting a couple of SUVs just to go do some regional shows. But their work ethic was second to none. And these guys would go out and no matter what, put on a rock show. And they had real gear, you know, guitars that were beat up, amplifiers that were beat up, and they had all these guitar changes and whatnot. And it just, those guys taught me a lot of the fundamentals of what I, you know, needed to learn at that time, especially being able to make repairs quick. You know, because again, you know, some of this gear would sit in a warehouse for, you know, a few months at a time when it's 103 degrees in Mississippi, and then we have to go to, you know, North Dakota where it's, you know, 70 degrees colder. So things like that. So, I mean, their gear got beat up a lot. And, you know, they sweat real bad. So, but I mean, those guys, you know, I owe those guys a lot as far as, you know, getting me my sea legs, if you would. And I mean, I did some like, you know, regional stuff for people, some local bands. Obviously I have my repair shop at home. So I kind of took everything I learned from that and just kept going with it. And, you know, I got this phone call from this guy in Michigan one day saying that they needed a guitar technician. And I went, okay. And he goes, so they go, what's this band called Pop Evil? And I went, okay. He goes, you know, you came highly recommended. You know, we want you to come out and hang out. And those guys changed my entire life. You know, they taught me pretty much everything that I had before and some. Those guys taught me the meaning of family, friendships, values, and, you know, evolving of gear and guitars and everything else. And, I was very fortunate to, you know, have such a long tenure with those guys and, you know, be able to still call those guys my, you know, some of my best friends and my family. That band taught me how to be a guitar technician. You know, and they were just the awesomest guys I think I've ever gotten to really work for. You know, they've definitely, you know, made it. So, I mean, they toured enough that it was one of those, I was always busy. When things broke, it wasn't just, oh, okay, let's just put a new cable in and go from here. It was, oh, hey man, you know, you know, and this is really broken. You know, so it kind of taught me how to move my feet even faster and figure out, you know, something goes wrong on stage with an amplifier, you know, what do you do? And how to rectify that quick. You know, I mean, there were times that, you know, you're going, oh hell, well, that amplifier just shut off. How do I get it turned back on without, you know, something really being noticeable, you know? So, you know, I'm very thankful for those guys and their patience and whatnot. And, but yeah, I mean, those guys taught me really how to, you know, how to move fast and, you know, have a good time with it too. You know, there wasn't I always had the stigma of guitar technicians that these guys are just guys wearing black off in a corner. And, you know, every once in a while they get a guitar thrown at them and they got to catch it and walk away. And that was all you ever saw of them. You know, we're working for those guys. I mean, you know, there's videos of us, you know, on stage, you know, fans will post and it's like, oh, you know, guitar player with crew guy having fun, you know, and it's, you know, and stuff like that, especially in today's society, you know, people have this stigma of rock and roll where it's just, we're all business and that's it, which is true. We are all business, but we're all also real people too with real feelings and emotions. And we're all out here doing the same thing. We all have families at home. And then we have our family on the road and, you know, that's a real brotherhood. You know, you just can't go out and, you know, not have that. So, I mean, I was very fortunate to, you know, be able to work with, you know, Davey was an amazing artist to work for. I have a million and one funny stories with him and I, like I said, one of which is about a guitar that got broken in half on stage accidentally. we'll get to that story when that time comes up for that, but
that's going to be
a good one. There's we may have to do a cutaway and you can find the pictures online of the guitar.
Sure.
but yeah, so that's a, you know, stuff like that. So, I was very fortunate for those guys. And I do, I owe the world to that band. So yeah. very fortunate to be able to work with that guy. And, you know, Shelby was just he's a great tour manager. And, you know, that man really taught me the fundamentals of, you know, you don't have to be blood to be family as well. So, you know,
yeah, I've been fortunate enough to have Shelby on here. We've had, yep. You know, obviously Brian on here as well.
Yep.
I've actually had Matt Dorito on here recently.
Yeah, see?
And a few others, but I mean, even the guys from Red Sun Rising, when they were Red Sun Rising, were on here. But yeah, you know, the point is, I don't know if there's a harder working band than Pop Evil, and they are like so many. So I mean, some of these, all of you guys are sort of the best. So I mean, they produce some excellent crew members just out of the, I mean, just a great band all around, great performances, great everything. So really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it was definitely an honor to be part of their family. You know, it's definitely, I mean, I learned so much from just working with those guys and interacting with them. You know, and again, I mean, I'm working with Brian, and then moving on to still working with Brian. And I mean, it's funny, man. I mean, you know, I look at it and it's just one of those, you're right. I mean, these guys, they, you know, they tour so often that, you know, you kind of learn, you know, you can learn how to make a mistake and then learn how to recover from that mistake. And you know, like I said, fortunately, you know, the guys in that band are very, forgiving when it comes to that. You know, they all understand that we're all only human. And that, you know, they have just this amazing heart, and, you know, they want you to keep learning on your journey and, you know, creating that with them. So, I mean, I can honestly say that's probably why, you know, you get a tour manager like Shelby, who is, you know, one of the elite, a production manager like Brian, who's one of the elite. So, I mean, then just the band members, I mean, that's all. You know, I don't know what they have in that water out in Michigan, but I mean, it must be doing something right.
Yeah. Lee's just a great front man. He's got a great vision.
Amazing.
It's just, I mean, overall, it's just a great team. And I think that a lot of the times when you have a core, you know, we'll just say lead person for your group that has those ethics, they want to surround themselves with similar ethics and similar people of quality.
Absolutely.
So I think that all just kind of speaks for itself right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Lee's a very good reading people. You know, it's one of those, you know, he's just very good at that, and he can look at you and tell you right off the rip whether, you know, you're in or you're out kind of deal. So he's just a great human like that. And I think it helps too, because he understands that, you know, we all have families at home. He's very family oriented. So, you know, we'd be on the bus. I mean, and he's asking me how my son's doing and stuff like that. I'd be on FaceTime with my kid, and, you know, we're sitting there talking about PlayStation games back and forth with our kids and stuff. So it's, like I said, I mean, those guys really instilled some big values into me, you know, as far as professionalism too. You know, when, like Shelby and I would walk off the bus, you know, wearing our Pop Evil crew shirts, and, you know, we'd grown to these big summer festivals, and we'd come walking off the bus, and people kind of give us that look like, oh, those Pop Evil's guys. All right. You know, I mean, you know, prime example, I mean, I know it was pretty well documented. We had a bunch of bus issues on our tour last summer. You know, just to give you an idea how great the band and crew were, we were doing a direct support show for Shinedown. Our bus broke down about the millionth time. God bless our bus driver. He, you know, has got the patience of a saint. You know, the band knew that I had my diesel background and whatnot. So there were times that, you know, I would have to wake up at 3 a.m. to make sure our bus made it to the show, but we'd get there. We'd have a show. But this one particular show, we're about 6 to 7 hours late to load in at an outdoor festival with Shinedown. And, we made it about an hour and a half before our set, to the point where we got there with our bus and we had to drive the bus through the crowd to get backstage to unload. And, you know, people are waving at us, you know, cheering us as they knew who was coming in. And, the crew that I had behind me at the time is, I mean, these guys are some of the elite of the elite. And, you know, I mean, Shelby and I wrangled these guys together with about, I don't know, 10 stagehands, and we from the time I think we dumped the trailer, we built our whole show behind the opener while they were playing. And it was one of those, I got on stage, plugged the guitars in and kind of gave the old each. Went, all right, I got signal. All right. You know, looked at Nick and Dave and, you know, gave them the old fist bump. You know, let's party. Let's do this. And they're looking at me like, you got this? And I was like, I hope so. And we cut one song and that was it. So these guys went out and, you know, so from the time the trailer dumped to the first note, I think it was just a little over an hour. And these guys didn't miss a beat. And we were able to entertain, I think it was, I don't know, 6,000 to 7,000 people at a outside show.
That's awesome.
And I mean, so yeah.
And you're talking normally, I mean, so when you're loading in, so when you're coming in, loading up and all that stuff, you're talking like good 3 or 4 hours between emptying out, sound checking and all that stuff, right?
That's right. That's right. That we did what was a true throw and go, if you would. We didn't even know if, I mean, I turned this gear on and I'm sitting there hoping, man, hope my RF signals are right from yesterday because I have just enough time to make sure they're good. And hopefully this wire is plugged in all the way. And well, let me spot tune these guitars and hope for the best. You know, normally I like to change my strings every day, but right. let's party, man. And, you know, I got to watch my best friends walk out onto that stage and not miss a beat. And I started watching. Yep.
Go ahead.
No, I just remember like looking on the stage and, you know, the guys turn around and look at me and they're just like, well, all right. I guess we're good. And I'm like, oh man. I attribute that to the professionalism of, you know, a leader like Shelby, you know, who taught me how to, you know, be, you know, kind of work with stagehands the right way and, you know, help me, you know, come into myself as a stage manager and allow me to make the mistakes to make things right. You know, and the guys in that band are really kind of build me into a guitar technician, you know? So, I mean, and then be able to share that knowledge with people on that crew as well and go, well, hey man, we have about 45 minutes to make a show happen. Well, normally it takes us 2.5 hours to make a show happen. Let's have fun.
That's crazy.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
And at those big festivals, I mean, you just, you have no idea. Cause you're walking. I mean, I've attended several where bands are, you know, running late, equipment's not working, all kind of weather, everything's a factor and you just have no idea. You can't plan for anything. You just got to use your skills.
That's it. I mean, there's been times we've rolled in and, you know, we've gotten across the border into Canada, you know, got held up at the border for whatever reason. And we still have to make a 3-hour drive to a festival and make a show happen. So, you know, it's kind of one of those, once you learn how to take a deep breath and kind of go come with a game plan while this is all happening, and make sure things go off without a hitch, you know, and if things aren't going right, how to make it right without, the people around you knowing that you're internally freaking out. You know, and again, that's where a strong leadership comes into play and, you know, dealing with, you know, working with, you know, like I said, people like Shelby, people like Brian, guys that are, you know, so used to working under the gun and, you know, coming out on top, you know, the, and like I said, just being able to learn from those guys kind of really, you know, kind of helped out along the way. So, but watching these guys, you know, or even other guys, you know, watching Charlie from Shinedown, their stage manager. I mean, that's another big guy. You know, when I was out with Bad Wolves, the stage manager from Papa Roach, Drew, was another guy. You know, we had an issue with a semi truck breaking down and, you know, that was a prime example of we have to make a show happen. And, you know, there's, you know, these bands on this crew and small, you know, each, you know, crew had a, you know, there was only a few of us and Papa Roach's semi broke down. We made a show happen. That semi got there an hour and a half before doors and we made it happen. You know, the whole crew came together and, you know, we had guys, you know, Drew was their stage manager and he was guiding one set of hands. He knew I was a stage manager. So I'm guiding a whole nother set of hands and, you know, he's dumping a truck. I'm receiving the truck and we're kind of guiding everything around. And that those fans in that crowd had no idea that that truck just showed up. And I still had to get my own band that I was working for on stage and sound checked at the same time. So I would just say it's the opportunity to work with people like that and, you know, kind of make chaos into reality and fun for everybody. You know, it's an interesting thing. So I'm very fortunate for that.
Yeah, turn chaos into art.
That's it.
So
that's it.
So when it comes to your at that time with when you're sort of getting started with Pop Evil, kind of learning your process, you're guitar teching for them, is that right?
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah. So walk us through what is your duties as a guitar tech? I mean, you've talked about a ton of stuff outside of that, but what is your specific duties as a guitar tech?
So, let's see here.
Tell me what is your schedule like when you're on a show as a guitar tech? What is your day?
So my day to day, we'll go with Pop Evil for instance.
Sure.
We load in at 10 o'clock in the morning. Or anywhere between 10 and noon, depending on the venue. We get in. I was also the stage manager. So, it was getting things in line, getting things placed, the stage accurate, all lined up, making sure risers are built. And then my day-to-day, as far as being the technician, is, making sure things are working properly, changing strings. There's nothing worse than, your boss gets one lead the entire night and goes to hit that one note and pink, there's nothing worse than that. Yeah. So, we try to avoid that kind of stuff. So, I like to change strings all the time. Changing strings, making sure the guitar is still set up the right way. A band like Pop Evil, you're going through, we're in Daytona Beach one day and then it's freezing cold the next. We're on a fly day to wherever, let's say Alaska, isn't it? For example, that didn't happen, but, it can be climate change is that drastic. So guitar is kind of, they're pieces of wood, even though they're cut into a guitar shape and everything else, wood still is alive and changes with, climate. So there's always something that can go wrong with that. It's just the upkeep and the maintenance on the instrument. Some days you get guys that, like Roman from Ginger likes to, he's a tone chaser. So it was something new every day on the Ginger tour. We were changing pickups. We were changing wiring configurations. Let's see here. What else did I change? Speakers and cabinets. Doing different biases on amplifiers. So, I mean, it can be a wide range of things. Like I said, I'm very fortunate to have had the pandemic to do a lot of studying on circuitry and woodworking and everything else that I can kind of come into these bands and they come with these crazy ideas and I'm like, oh, that sounds like a blast, let's do that. My day-to-day can be as simple as setting up a guitar amplifier and putting some strings on a guitar, or as complex as, hey man, I just blew out the power section of my amplifier, we need it for tonight. We can't get a rental in. I need you to fix that tonight. Okay, cool. Things like that, so it can vary depending on what it is.
Right. And so the band's performing, they're doing their show, you're side stage ready for whatever may happen, ready to roll, swapping out guitars. Cause a lot of times I think a lot of bands use multiple guitars for different tunings and stuff like that.
Correct.
So you have to have them all prepped and ready to go and ready to swap and all that stuff.
Yep.
When the show's over, when the show's done, I assume you're grabbing stuff and packing things up and
closing up
and all that stuff.
Yep. I'm making sure everything gets put away properly. So when we put it in the semi or in the trailer, it doesn't get broken during shipping, to the next city. There's nothing worse than, having a stagehand, or whomever, someone trying to help, pack your guitar gear up and they don't do it the right way. And you get to the next city and you open up your guitar vault and nothing's strapped down and you have things that are broken or misplaced, which has happened, unfortunately. And then you just have to kind of figure out how to make the best of it and, make it work. As a guitar player, there's nothing worse than having someone come up to you and say, hey man, so this got left in the last city, or, hey, this got broken, what, and you're like, oh, what do you do now? But it's where you, the recovery that you come back from that, I guess, is what, all you can do. So, like I said, I've been very fortunate that, I've always had pretty good stage hands and You know, great crew guys that are always, you know, there's always a dummy check done. And, you know, I've never opened up a guitar vault and been like, well then, oh, six out of eight guitars are smashed in half because they get strapped down to the wall in semi, you know? So I've heard horror stories about that though.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, that's always a fun time.
When it comes to, I asked Shelby this a while back and I said, so what was it like the first time you actually were sleeping and living on a bus, you know, from going from never doing that to actually doing that the first time? Was there an adjustment for you?
So, you know, I remember, I just look at it back in the days of going from being in a van to, being in my own band, getting like an RV or a bandwagon. And back then these things were kind of pretty new. So at that time, you know, the bandwagon hadn't quite perfected some things yet. So, you know, those things they're great if on that touring level. You know, as long as the U-bolts on the bodies are tightened all the way and, you know, the driver doesn't hit a bump and the whole thing kind of shifts on you. That was my first big adjustment of going, man, maybe I need to reevaluate what I'm doing in life. And then when I started touring on the national level as a tech and getting into buses, you know, it's an interesting thing, sleeping backwards, doing 65 miles an hour. That's you know, depending on where you are in the food chain on the bus too, you know, you can be on the bottom, you can be all the way on the top. You know,
which is better or worse?
So I usually like to be on the bottom, depending on the time of year. And when I say depending on the time of year, if you're on the bottom bunk over the generator in the summer, that can get pretty hot. And if you're on the top bunk, depending on the time of year, you know, and you have a driver who may be going a little too fast, you kind of know you're going too fast into a corner, depending on how good your bus is as well. But I don't mind the penthouse suite, if you would. I don't mind being on a ton of bunk, but you know, it's an interesting thing though, especially, you know, you're on a top bunk, you kind of got to scale up there, you know. Yeah, I mean, I'm only 5'7", so it's kind of, you know, getting on that top bunk can be interesting sometimes.
I was gonna say, Shelby said that. He said that when it comes to sleeping on the bus, he goes, that is the best sleep he gets all year round. He goes, when he's not wrong. When you're on the bus, it's the best sleep you get.
He's not wrong. I mean, it can get pretty grueling sometimes. I mean, like I said, especially, you know, if the bus is having mechanical issues, like with the air conditioning.
Oh, right.
You know, stuff like that. You know, you get 12 people on a bus and the AC goes out, or you get guys that are or certain bands that like it hot, and it shouldn't be hot. which is a thing. You know, yeah. I'm always I'm a firm 68 degree AC kind of person. You know,
yeah, me too.
I don't like that. If it's 75 degrees, I don't want to be part of, you know, your terrarium. You know what I mean? I'm not okay with that. You know,
yep, same here.
But yeah, I mean, he's absolutely right. I mean, you know, you get in a smooth riding bus and you get in that bunk and you put your AirPods in or, you know, just noise canceling headphones. And I mean, I've gone to bed in a bus and I've woken up the next day and I've never gotten better sleep. You know, when I come home, it's always this vicious cycle of coming home from being on tour. Fortunately, when I come home, it's very briefly, you know, little quick burst. By the time I get adjusted to not having my house move, you know, doing 60 miles an hour with me in it, I'm back on the road. But so it is. It's a good sleep for me. It's the most peaceful sleep for me. I mean, getting on a bus is, you know, definitely zen like. So yeah, definitely. I mean, he's not wrong. Especially you get the vents blown the right way in there, you're out.
Yep. Nice. So guitar. You're guitar teching for Pop Evil. Is Pop Evil the band you started stage managing for?
So I originally started, the first band I stage managed for was Saving Abel.
Okay. All right.
So I you know, I got into doing it on that. And then, like I said, fortunately, you know, I've worked my way up in the ranks as far as bands go. So being able to take things I've learned in the past and build on them and going on tour with other bands and watching how some of these you know, big arena bands put on their productions and working with their guys and just show, you know, studying how they work and, you know, their ethic, you know, it's kind of helped me build, you know, that kind of, you know, chemistry and energy and stuff like that. And to bring to my own, you know, my own, way of doing things.
Right.
So,
yeah. What is the duties of stage manager?
So that can be a lot of different things. Right. You know, you're basically in charge of the trailer pack, the overall time of the show from, you know, when you get there to the openers, loading on the opening bands, the support bands, making sure they stay on time, making sure changeovers are on time and correct. Safety is a big thing. You know, making sure that, you know, like prime example for Rockville, we were shooting pyro off at Rockville. You know, you got to make sure that stuff's right so no one gets hurt. You know, making sure you're up to fire code. If, you know, the people are going to do a walkthrough, you have to walk through with them. You know, guiding the stagehands, you know, not being a dick to the stagehands is always a big thing too. You know, you get more bees with honey. You know, it kind of works that way. So you're kind of that guy when it comes to, you're the overseer of that. You know, I know from, you know, you have the people that, the production manager oversees one section of the show. And then from that time that deck that those bands are on, you know, I own that. But if something goes wrong on that stage, I'm the go-to guy. Okay. That can be anything. That could be why wasn't this cable put down securely? You know, why wasn't this rigged correctly? Stuff like that. Why wasn't the backdrop put up the right way? Why aren't we perfectly straight today? You know, and making sure, like I said, your support bands are well taken care of as well. So it can be a lot of different roles that you're when you're in the stage manager.
Yeah, and you've been doing you've been working with Pop Evil for several years. What other acts have you worked with since then?
So I have, let's see here. I have worked for Ginger. I'm their guitar technician, stage manager. I've gotten to go, went out with Bad Wolves, Suicide Silence. I'm actually going to Europe with them next week. Nice. And then more recently I have taken over the guitar technician role for In This Moment.
Yep.
So I've been very fortunate to work with some incredible people in my career.
Most of those bands are two guitar bands, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. The only one that is not is Ginger.
Okay. And, right, yeah.
So, but they, those guys bring in a whole different element of things. And, you know, Eugene, their bass player is, he is not just a bass player. I'll put it that way. Watching that man play is something unreal. It's just one of those things that if you've never seen it, you have to go watch it. You know, the way that these guys play and write is just next level. I've never seen anything like that in my life. So talented.
So for people watching, if they don't know, Ginger is a brand new, brand new to them, obviously. They're a newer band, really killer band, but they're also out of Ukraine.
Correct, they are.
Which has been unfortunate for them with everything going on. Yeah. They had a big tour scheduled for, this year, and that got canceled due to everything going on.
Oh, yeah.
Weird, but really what a tragic situation they're in with their home country being invaded and all that stuff. But, and they, you know, stopped touring to be in their country and, you know, do what they can to help, which is amazing.
Yeah. They actually, it just came out. You know, they did the press release, I think yesterday. They had been given the opportunity to leave Ukraine and tour on a humanitarian mission to educate the masses of what's actually happening in Ukraine. Make income for their country to put back into circulation as far as donations and everything else. These guys, you know, we were supposed to go out and do a massive support tour with Slipknot and In This Moment. And, you know, that was a week before we were set to fly out for pre-production. You know, this very, you know, this terrible war broke out for absolutely no reason. And, you know, watching that unfold, and these guys are some of my best friends. So aside from that, they're colleagues of mine. You know, these are people that I lived on a bus with, and, you know, we chat all the time, and we, you know, we have amazing stories together. So it's kind of, you know, watching that happen was, you know, just, it crushed me. There's people that I love and care about. And, so, you know, watching them be able to go from being in that musician mode to, you know, patriotic mode and humanitarian roles, and watching them take their hard earned living and taking that money and buying generators for people, providing care to people, buying groceries for, you know, people that know they don't even know, you know, just to help out. I mean, that just shows, it goes to show you, you know, the kind hearted people that they actually truly are. So, I mean, it's when they said that they were going to be able to go out and do what they do best and play music again and support of their country, that's pretty magical. So they do, I know that they have some European dates that they're actually heading out right now to go do. So, you know,
are you going to be part of that at all?
Not on this leg. We're working on some stuff for, later on. So hopefully I'll be able to go help them out with that. You know, I know this has kind of popped up out of nowhere that they were able to go do this. So
yeah,
we're kind of basing it off that, you know, taking it, you know, little bit at a time, you know, taking it by ear.
Yeah. But, and for, you know, for the members of the band, I just want to say, I think they're fantastic. And, you know, I really wish them absolute, you know, success, and, you know, wish them the best for their country. And, you know, it's horrible to watch this from afar.
Oh, it's, I know.
It's such a strange situation, but also such a terrible, it's so bad to see this. And, you know, you know, I'm definitely heartbroken by what's going on for them. So I wish them the best. Everyone.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That was definitely a first for me. You know, it's people kind of can turn on CNN and see this stuff and they go, oh, that sucks. It doesn't affect me. And then, right. You know, which is a majority of the world news. People see something happening in another country and they're like, oh, you know, oh, okay. And then they scan to the next channel or whatever. And then something like that, you know, you see something on that and you're like, oh my God, you know, I'm getting ready. I'm picking up my phone. Hey, are you okay? You right. know, I never thought in a million years that I would be, you know, turning on the news and, you know, right after I've talked to one of the guys in the band and, you know, going, oh my God, Russia declared war on Ukraine. They're firing missiles at my friends. What? Is this real life? You know, I never in a million years would have thought that. So, yeah, it makes you take a big step back at how our lives are. And, you know, just because, you know, we have these great freedoms and the ability, like you and I are sitting right here on FaceTime, you know, talking about rock and roll and whatnot, that, you know, people don't get to do that. And this is certain things that some of us may take for granted. And, you know, these people have, you know, some don't even have a phone right now or internet because of that. So it's wild, man. It's wild. I never thought I'd ever, you know, have to be like, wow, these people that I actually know.
Yeah. And I would encourage everyone who's watching this to, you know, at least check them out, you know, buy a song from them or buy the album, do something, absolutely, buy a shirt, just do something to support them, because, you know, they're an excellent, excellent band, and it's very important.
They do have on their website right now, some shirts for sale that I believe all the 100% of the proceeds go to, Ukraine to help them, you know, with, what's going on over there, and give back to those communities and the people that are in need over there that, they don't have a house to go to anymore, or they, you know, they don't have food or power. And, but that's what all those donations would go for. So, you know, if anyone can get Ginger
with a J,
Ginger with a J,
J-I-N-J-E-R. Yes, that's right.
Go
check them out. They're really, really good. Hey, thanks for watching part one of our interview with Tom Raritan. We hope you enjoyed it. You can check out our other guests, all our other episodes, at all your favorite podcast locations and on YouTube. Search for Tales from the Pit podcast. Remember to like and subscribe. And you can also check out our website at TalesFromThePit.net. We'll see you next time.